Because we didn't say so on the episode, Charlie and I wanted to take just a second to remind you that this week's episode music is brought to you in honor of the 4th of July, which is Independence Day here in the United States. So we wanted to take just a moment to celebrate our freedom and to say God bless each and every one of you, and God bless the United States of America. You're listening to Alternate Reality, episode 391. The slow and steady march to 400 episodes continues. Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned. Hello and welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
And I'm Charlie.
And we're here each and every week, well, most weeks, to talk to you guys about comic books and everything going on in the comic-related universe. That's comic book movies, comic book TV shows, comic book video games, and sometimes not comic book things. You know, like if we talk about, you know, God of War, then it's not comic book related. So we keep an open mind about these kinds of things and keep our options. Well, not directly.
There have been comic books of God of War.
Oh, sure, but it's not a comic book property. You understand what I mean. The audience understands what I mean. It's not that God of War was a comic that they adapted into a video game. That's what I'm getting at. But like I said, we are primarily focused on comic books, but we expand from there into all points of geekery and are liable to talk about anything that you might be interested in as a fellow nerd. And we like to think that we're up on the scene as it is to that degree. So we are happy to be with you this week to continue that tradition of comic book podcasting excellence. And we've got a host of comic books to talk to you about this week. Charlie, did you have a good weekend?
It was all right.
I had a crap weekend. I had just all kinds of things happen to me that I didn't expect. My sewer backed up. I had to dig a hole in the ground and get some dude to come with a truck and pump that thing out. It was nasty, it stank, and cost me about $300 and some odd. I had a crappy, air quotes, weekend. And that's just one of the many things that the indignities that I suffered over the past few days. So it's been a rough weekend. I'm glad to finally get a chance to sit down and relax a little bit tonight and talk about comic books and all the things going on in the world of comics.
Yeah, it's kind of nice living in a town where you don't have to have a sewer line.
I imagine so, which is one of the reasons why, and this is a little known fact, I'll go ahead and share it with the Alternate Reality podcast, is that we are considering selling our house. We have had some people talk to us that are interested in buying it as an investment. They want to come in, they want to make some modifications to it and flip it for a profit. And we're not really willing to put the work into it ourselves, so we may let them have it for a reasonable price. That gives us the opportunity to move out and go somewhere else. And I said one of the stipulations was that the place I moved to, if I could possibly arrange it and possibly afford it, would be maybe within a city limit somewhere where there was actual sewer service from the city and there would be no septic issues. That would be amazing.
So Lexington, they always have those water main breaks.
Yeah.
Like almost every other day. It's like, there's water main break in this area, in this area, in this area.
Boil water advisory, don't drink the water, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know. I see that on the news from time to time. So I'm thinking a good middle ground, because you don't want to go to Lexington. Cost of living is too high in Lexington. And I'm a little too rural where I'm at now. So a good middle ground might be, say, Winchester, where Charlie lives. Now imagine that, Charlie being close to me and could be over at my house every night. I know my family's excited about that.
Yeah, that's not happening.
So, or I could be at his.
That's not happening.
Oh, wow. Okay. You're a real friend. So, we got a lot of comic books to talk to you about this week. We got some stuff coming up in the next little bit that'll be interesting, and we'll be talking about, you know, I'm looking forward to see, you know, it was big spoilers this week. Batman number 50 was spoiled. I purposely have avoided it. Charlie apparently knows about it. And I can't wait to see what that's all about. Although Tom King has been on Twitter just recently. I just read it just a few minutes ago. About how, I don't know what everybody's worked up about spoilers, because this Batman Catwoman love story is a 100-issue story. I was like, really? 100 issues? You mean you're still going to be writing this at Batman 150? And how many years is that? I'm like, oh my God. So, no, I just, you know, the idea that this spoiler doesn't matter because this is just the beginning. That seems weird. So we got that coming up to look forward to. The conclusion of Flash War is coming up. And read an article today that Flash War will answer the age-old question definitively about who is faster, the Flash or Superman. So I'm looking forward to finding out the answer to that. So a lot of interesting things coming up in the world of comics in the next little bit. And we'll keep our eyes glued and tell you guys what to think. Well, not what to think, but what we thought, to give you an idea of maybe it's something you're interested in or not. So, anything else, Charlie, before we get started?
Nope.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to start the reviews. You guys sit tight.
Whoa. This song's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like Ozzy. Dun, 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 dun.
Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. We're back now to talk to you about this week's comics. Not necessarily the things that came out this week, but the things me and Charlie read this week. They could be 50 years old. If we read it, we can talk about it. But most of this stuff probably came out in the last week or two. I read, because it gained a lot of attention last week, Century Number One. Charlie, did you check this out?
Yes.
So, we all remember Bob, the Century.
Bob Reynolds.
Bob is the character that Marvel invented some years ago as a parody of Superman. He's even got a big S on his belt buckle, and it's clear what Bob is. But Marvel... Well,
it wasn't a parody. It was... They said it was one of their long-lost created
characters. Yeah, that's a lie.
They found it. But yeah, that was a lie, but it wasn't a parody of him.
Well, but it is, really, because he's like infinitely powerful, overly powerful, the way that Superman is compared to normal characters, but even within the DC universe. And so, I think his power's got something to do... He's got the power of a million exploding suns or whatever. So there's even a sun reference to do with his powers. It clearly is... In much the same way that Wade Wilson is a takeoff of Slade Wilson and so forth, the Century is a takeoff of Superman. But the only difference is they took Superman, which is a near-perfect godlike being, and they've made him damaged. And he's damaged in the sense that the Century's a little crazy. And he's got his worst enemy, the Void, within him. This is his arch-nemesis, is an entity that lives inside him. And every time the Century is active, the longer he's active, the more he uses his power, the more opportunity the Void has to manifest himself and come out. So, this all... Now, here's the weird thing, Charlie. The last time we saw Century was back during, like...
Siege.
Yes, was it Siege? Yeah, so this was all during...
Where Ares ripped him.
Well, he ripped Ares. Yeah, he ripped Ares in half. That's how Ares died.
No, that's how he died.
No, it was the other way around, my friend.
No, you're wrong.
Okay, well, while I talk about this issue, you need to look that up.
That's why they kind of parodied it in this issue where he...
Right, he rips a character in half in here.
And that's how he died.
But again, that's not where something
Ares did that.
Killed that's him. Something the Sentry did to someone, not something that happened to him. We'll agree to disagree momentarily. But the last time we saw him, and to my knowledge, whether you're right or whether I'm right, because I thought the Sentry died a different way, but we both thought he was dead.
Because that was after he threw Carnage into the sun.
So we both thought Sentry was dead, whether you thought it happened your way or I thought it happened a different way. We both assumed Sentry was dead. Now suddenly Sentry is just back, and they offer zero. I repeat, zero explanation as to how Sentry is back. What happened to it? Why the what happened to him previously either didn't happen or didn't change or what? Okay? So the idea is that the Sentry is this old character, and every night he works some kind of day job in a diner, you know, cooking eggs and bacon and hash browns, kind of like at a truck stop or something, right? And he's got just the worst kind of life. He's like poor white trash. He's kind of out of shape. He's got a gut. But he goes home every night and he sits down in front of this device, a device made by Tony Stark. And this device lets him escape into an imaginary world where he's the Sentry. And while he's in that imaginary world, he can use his power as much as he wants and be the hero that he wants to be. And exercise his demons, if you will, to some degree, and work off all that excess power and energy. But there's no danger that the void that is lurking within him can get out because he's not actually using his powers in the real world. And so he goes through the same thing every night where he saves the world. And then when it's over, he comes back home and he's just regular old Bob, old beardy-faced, scruffy-looking Bob, who has to get up the next morning and go to work at the truck stop again. This issue gives us a lot about Bob's life and what he's been through. There's even a character in his life that, you know, was like his sidekick in this imaginary world that he had made up. Because like Superman, Bob had, in his imaginary world, he had a Supergirl, but they were Sentry characters. So Sentry Girl, Sentry Boy, Sentry Dog, just the same way as Superman.
No, these were all real characters. They just...
These characters didn't exist previously.
Yes, they did.
Did they?
Yes.
Well, I missed that.
And because the thing is, when the Sentry was created, everyone had to forget who he was. Mm-hmm. Because if he remembered who he was,
right,
that's when the Void would show up, right?
Okay.
So the whole point of that miniseries was him going back and revisiting his friends. And one of his friends was the fry cook guy here with the one arm.
Okay.
And his girlfriend, well, he was married during the Avengers run. And his wife, like, kept dying, like, every
third like
issue
that.
Or something.
Now, this has never been really like, explained. It's been, that. Like, 8 years ago. So some of these details are a little sketchy, hard to keep up with at this point.
But, yeah, his sidekick guy was... His sidekick.
But I can't remember the sidekick's name. I don't know if it's Danny or Timmy or something like that. But whatever it is, he's sitting there on the stoop with him, and they're both really aggravated because his sidekick character is, like, really lamenting that the life now sucks. I mean, life is horrible. This is the worst kind of life. And you know, Bob's going, well, it's not that bad, you know. And he says, not for you. You get to go home every night and escape into your fantasy world and be the Sentry and relive old glories. He said, none of the rest of us get that. We just have to stay in the now where it sucks. And he's really, really dissatisfied and angry, you know. So basically the gist of this issue is that Bob has a run-in with Misty Knight. Misty Knight, who's working for some kind of government agency, says, Bob, you're not... you know, checking in with us the way you're supposed to. He said, I shouldn't have to freaking call you every day. You all can monitor whether or not I'm using the machine. She goes, that's not the agreement. You're supposed to do it. And she gives him a hard time, and he reluctantly agrees, and then she lets him go on home. He goes on home, and it's running late. If he doesn't get up there to use his machine, he's going to miss his opportunity, and then, boy, that would be bad. And he comes in to find the machine gone. His place has been broken into, and, you know, everything is... It looks like it's been ransacked, and his little machine thing that Tony Stark has made for him is gone. And then you see in the imaginary world how the transport thing lights up like somebody's coming in, and they go, oh, look, you're here. And then the door opens up, and the character standing around go, oh, wait, you're not the Sentry. And then they promptly start killing all these characters in his imaginary world. And so you have to wonder who that is. They don't tell you. They just leave you hanging there with a cliffhanger at the end of it. So my theory is, and I think that they probably have intentionally led me to believe this, so it probably isn't true, but my theory is that it's his old sidekick character who's disgusted with his life and he wants to be powerful again. So he's gone and taken the century's place and gone back into that world and is going to usurp that power and keep it. Now, that's really easy conclusion to draw based on the setup of this story. So I have to think that's probably not how it's really going to play out because it's too simple. But that's certainly the way it seems like it's going. So here's the question. This was well written. I enjoyed this for the most part. It was interesting and it keeps me guessing about what is going on here. Why revisit this character? For the most part, the way I recall it is that Jeff Lemire writes this. And so the way I recall it is the Sentry as a character was kind of moaned and groaned every time that they used him in Marvel. You know, Marvel brought him out, and he was kind of a fun, whimsical nod to Superman. But then when he became a serious player in the DC, in the Marvel Universe, everybody's kind of like, we don't need this character. This character doesn't fit in. And they eventually...
They made him super crazy.
Right. And he was a huge liability.
To where, like, he couldn't even, like, go outside.
Right.
Because he was agoraphobic, he was...
Right.
Claustrophobic, like, I mean,
he was liable to fly off at any time about anything and become the void. He was a literal ticking time bomb.
And remember that one issue where they actually brought Bendis in to talk to him,
right?
Because he was a character that he created,
right? So again, I think it got to the place where the Sentry, where even the Marvel fans were like kind of groaning when the Sentry was used. I'm like, oh man, is he in this issue? Because he was kind of just...
I always called him Crazy Bob.
You know, Crazy Bob. And so it became kind of a running gag, not only in the story, but amongst the fans about how lame this character was. And so Marvel kind of got to the place to go, you know, we need to just get rid of him. And they did. They got rid of him. They killed him. So the thing is, we still don't know how he got back, where he's been, what's happened. I assume all that will be explained. It was written, like I said, Jeff Lemire is not a bad writer. He writes well. I just question whether or not Marvel made a good decision with working with this character again.
Apparently Thor killed him. And he did kill Ares.
Yeah, I thought I remembered that correctly. So,
but Thor killed him. At the end of Siege, I guess, still.
Yeah. So
then he was brought back by the Apocalypse Twins and made a Horseman of Apocalypse. That's how he came back.
Ah! Well, see, now that may have been while I wasn't reading comics, so that's maybe why I don't know that.
And then he apparently came back and worked with Doctor Strange for a while.
Okay. All right. Well, then that answers some of that question. They maybe should have recapped in this. Kind of give us a century history. Would have been good. All right. So I'll probably stay on another issue or two just to kind of see what happens. But
if you like this century, read other centuries.
Yeah. But I don't know that I'm like really, really worked up or excited about this. This is just kind of an oddity that's going on within the Marvel Universe that kind of went, what's that about?
Yeah, they brought out a couple new books last week. It was this one. Multiple Man got his first issue.
Right.
But his is a miniseries. I'll tell you, that was kind of dumb. I read that one too. It's basically he comes back and like he finds out that he's one of the dupes.
Oh yeah, that happened in like 2/3 of all Jamie Madrox stories. Is you're following this character and he thinks he's Jamie and he finds out he's a dupe.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, they try to figure out how to like make him like
the real one,
the real Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
So what he does is he's talking to a beast to help him do that. And he steals Cable comes in. He steals his time travel gimmick. He travels into the future like a couple months or years or something.
Right.
And he's like talking to Beast. He's like, well, have you figured that out? And he's like, well, not yet. I'm stuck on like one little thing, and then all these other Jamies from the future come back. Like there's a Deadpool Jamie, there's a Cable Jamie,
right?
And they're all Jamie Madrox, and they attack him. It was really weird. It's kind of stupid.
So, a question I've always kind of wondered about the multiple man, Jamie Madrox, is can just the core Jamie is the only one that's able to make dupes, or can dupes make dupes?
Dupes can make dupes.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
But that's the thing. They were like, don't bump into anything because you don't want another dupe running around.
Okay.
Like I said, it was kind of stupid.
I didn't remember that off the top of my head. It seemed like I probably knew that, but I didn't remember off the top of my head.
I read Venom 3 as well.
Right.
And it was kind of weird because, like, you know how, like, in the first issue, they were all worried about the symbiote god coming to Earth or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he does in the third issue. And it's this dude who looks like Dracula. Like, he's got, like, purple skin. Mm-hmm. But he's got, like, white hair. And he just looks like a Dracula knockoff. And he's like, yes, I'm Null, the king of the god of the symbiotes or whatever. Like, it's just weird. That was kind of dumb, too. I was like, for a book that started out pretty good, it failed miserably, I thought.
All right, Charlie, that brings us to the next book that you want to review, and that's Weatherman number 1. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Well, Weatherman number 1 is kind of an interesting book. It's written by Jody LeHoop.
LeHoop.
And the art's done by Nathan Fox, and I guess the letterist Dave Stewart, or the colorist is Dave Stewart. Yeah. And the letterer is Stephen Wands. Well, this book is a very futuristic book, kind of a Blade Runner-esque thing. So it starts out, and it's this woman, and this older woman, and this younger woman, they're going somewhere. And it turns out they're on Mars, right? The year 2770.
Right.
And Mars is a fully formed planet. And what they do is they go to, like, this memorial service, right? And it turns out that it's, for all intents and purposes, it looks like the Earth, right?
Right.
So, then we switch to, like, the main storyline where the weatherman wakes up in his bed. His name is Nathan. And Nathan's going about his business, you know, like, trying to get ready for work. Well, he finally makes it to the station, and he goes through his weather duties, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, this weather, like, I don't know how you call it, when they do the whole weather, the weather bit or whatever, the mm-hmm. part.
The forecast
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a comedy sketch show.
Oh, yeah, really?
So where he's telling jokes and he's laughing, he's dancing or whatever. And even at one point, he's like, line, give me my line, right? Like, he's acting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, his boss comes up to him during the thing, and he's like, yo, Nathan, I need you to make sure that Columbia gets, or, like, this province gets 3 inches of rain.
Oh, so he's not just forecasting the weather.
He's making the weather.
Okay.
So then later on that night, he goes out on dinner with this girl, and it turns out this is the younger girl from beforehand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to her, and they're kind of like, they're in a quasi-relationship where, like, he thinks, like, oh, you're my girlfriend, blah, 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 but she's, like, not there yet, right? Or she's, like, says that she's not there. Well, while that's going on, they're attacked during the meal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, by these guys, and the Nathan guy thinks that they're trying to kill the girl, right? He's like, oh, I'll protect you, but he's kind of a weak, like, weakling little guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he he like tries to act like he's like doing something, and like he gets a gun, he starts shooting at him. He's like, "Yeah, I'll protect you. I'll protect you." Well, it turns out that this woman was sent here to protect him, because she turns out and she pulls these guns out. And she's wasting these guys, right? Mm-hmm. But like at the end of the issue, when she gets rid of them, she turns around and says, Nathan's like, "Yeah, I love you," you know, he's like that. And she turns around and she goes, "Nathan, you're under arrest for the murder of 18 billion men, women, and children." So apparently he was the cause of the destruction of Earth.
Really?
Okay. Somehow.
Somehow. Fascinating.
Yeah. It was kind of interesting. It's from the same guy who did Shirtless Bear Fighter.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Which I thought was great. Which is kind of funny because they actually have an ad in the book for the Shirtless Bear Fighter action figure.
Oh, they've got seriously an action figure? Or is it a joke ad?
No, it's a real ad. Because the writer, Tony, was telling us about it at Heroes Con.
Oh, really?
Okay. Me, Chris, and John Wimmer, Nuggie99. I'll find it. But, well, the funny thing is about the Shirtless Bear Fighter thing is if you read the book, they call him Shirtless Bear Fighter, but he's nude the whole time.
Oh.
When he's fighting the bears.
He's not just shirtless, he's pantless and everything.
Well, the figure actually comes with like
pixelated growing area.
Pixelated growing area. But if you pre-order it, you get the little bear rug that comes with it.
Oh. Okay.
Cool. But but Shirtless Bear Fighter was like a book that was like on the level of like Chew.
Right.
So where it was like there was like there would be attacks in the city and there would be bears. Mm-hmm. Well, they would call him in because he was the head of the bear force. And he was the only one who could fight the bears.
Right. So it's a ridiculous thing, but it was a really well done comedy.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. It's interesting.
Like he was raised by bears and like bad bears killed his parents. Like killed his real mom and dad, I think, and then he was raised by bears. It was weird. There was a lot of stuff going on in that miniseries.
Cool. Alright, moving right along. Man of Steel number 5. I don't think we've talked about this since the first issue came out.
I thought you said 4.
5. No, this was 5. Yeah. If I said 4, I apologize. But we'll talk about all of that.
That's fine.
As I'll give you kind of a recap as to what's happened. Alright, so
the art change in the second book kind of threw
off. But we've had a different artist every week, and there's been weeks where it's been better, weeks where it's been worse. Adam Hughes is this week. It's pretty good.
Yeah, he was talking about like how he drew something in the issue, and he's like, no one said anything about it.
Oh, I don't know what
like
that
he drew
might
the
be.
Batmobile or something.
Yeah, I don't know if he did something wonky with something. I missed it. So
I just saw he commented that he's like, no one mentioned this.
So the gist of this issue is that this Rogal Zar character is still Superman, and this guy are having a Superman Doomsday style throwdown.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's quite on that level of destruction, but it's close to. The only difference is that this character is a little smarter than Doomsday was, so he's not just wantonly, rampantly killing anything that stands in his way. He's got a focused attack that's focused on Superman. And so if Superman gets kind of layweight or something, he doesn't just start killing the next available thing the way Doomsday might would. He's only interested in Superman. And so Superman actually is trying to get him off planet as this book opens up, and there's a really nice scene here where Superman is flying him into the stratosphere, you know, trying to, because Superman, I don't know how many times I've seen Superman fight a bad guy and Superman's like, I gotta get him off the earth, and Superman will fly up, and this other guy will worm his way out of Superman's hands, you know, in the upper atmosphere, and then this guy will be falling if he can't fly, or if he can fly, they'll have an aerial fight. But if he can't fly, he's falling. And now Superman's got to try to catch him before he hits the ground. It's happened 100,000 times. Superman never actually gets the guy off planet. So this time he actually does. But while he's in space, the bad guy, Rogalzar, gets the upper hand on him and, like, knocks him into the moon. The moon's taken a lot of punishment the last little bit. The moon was destroyed in the century because they're in the fantasy world that the century creates for himself. The moon was originally destroyed in the Justice League book, and now it's taking heavy damage here. I mean, this crack looks like it runs halfway across the surface of the moon.
Yeah, he put the Batmobile in the scene where Superman's flying, and Kara and Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So he's flying away from the Hall of Justice, and apparently there's a Bat. He parks the Batmobile in one of the issue.
Okay, cool. So they're fighting on the surface of the moon, similar to how Superman and Nuclear Man fought on the surface of the moon in Superman 4. There's a lot of throwbacks in this issue. There's a lot of little nods to other things in this issue. And so I thought it was really cool. Well, Rogalzar gets the upper hand on Superman, actually knocks him cold, and leaves him on the surface of the moon. And he goes back to Earth. While he's cold, we have a flashback to the thing that appeared in the kitchen during the first week. And we said, oh my God, what's this thing that showed up in Superman's home? We don't know what it is.
Light.
Well, we figured out what that is over the last couple of issues. Superman's given us bits and pieces of his flashback. And what that was, it was just like a giant spacefaring pod of some kind that opened up. And in it is Jor-El, the same Jor-El from that storyline that wrapped up in Action Comics.
Oz effect.
Yeah, the Mr. Oz Jor-El. Yeah. The scarred-faced Jor-El that apparently Dr. Manhattan had rescued from Krypton's destruction a fraction of a second before it blew up. Okay, and so this is the same Mr. Oz, or we'll call him Damaged Jor-El, that was giving Superman all kinds of trouble and had captured Robin and was tormenting him and was doing all kinds of horrible things. Well, this guy shows up, and he comes in there and he says, Kal-El, I need my grandson. And Superman's like, no. And he goes, I will take him across the cosmos. I will teach him things that you can't possibly teach him here. I will give him the breadth and width of knowledge that only a Kryptonian education can experience. And I'll do all this quickly and have him back to you soon within just a few weeks. And Superman's like, no. And Lois is just, she's like losing it. She's like, there's no way in blankety blank ever that
after
this...
After all that crap you put us through?
Yeah, yeah. And so she finally looks over at Superman, and Superman looks down at his son, and his son goes, I want to go with Grandpa, Dad. And he's like, son, you really don't understand what you're saying. No, I want to go. I think it'll be fun. No, son. And he's like, son, you know, the boy wants to go. You need to step aside and let him come. And he goes, I'll be fine, Dad. You need to trust me. And Superman looks at Jor-El, and he looks at his son. He looks at Jor-El and looks at his son. He looks over at Lois, and he's like, well, it is his grandfather. And Lois is like, you're not seriously considering this. All right, now, here's the thing. We have not seen Lois in any of the current continuity stuff. We've only seen her in this flashback. So the question that everybody's...
Yeah, because everyone at the planet's been asking him,
where's Lois? Where's Lois? And so... The idea is that everybody thought something happened to Lois. I don't think anything did. And so we don't get her. We don't find out what Superman says in this to his father. I think Superman's going to actually say, all right, fine, you can go. And he's going to let him go. And it's going to make Lois so mad that she's going to leave him. Now, I'm not saying permanently, like Superman and Lois are getting divorced or nothing. But I mean, temporarily, they have to have some time apart. And that's the reason that Superman's been running around for these five issues without Lois, and then without even mentioning Lois's name, because as of right now, they're not together. That's what I think's going on. I don't know if she's gone to stay with her sister. I don't know where she's at. I don't know if she's on assignment in some foreign country somewhere. But I think that's what's going on. I think that Superman actually let the boy go, which is really weird that he would even consider it after everything that happened. Now you go back to Metropolis and you're getting all these fires and that new fire chief lady that we talked about was introduced in the first issue. And Supergirl is actually there in Superman's place trying to put these fires out. She gets help from the League. They show up. The odd that the League shows up to help put out fires. But I think the reason they're really there is they're looking for Superman because they understand that he's in trouble and nobody can find him. They've scanned the Earth and he's not there. And Supergirl's like, do you know what happened to him? And he goes, no, we don't see him. She glances up and the moon is in the sky. And you can see a squint in her eye like she's focusing. And she apparently sees Superman on the moon. And she's gone into the stratosphere that fast. Some of the artwork that Adam puts in this is really nice. Like, it reminds me of a little bit of the Superman movie, how he would zoom through space just a little bit. And it's just really well done. She bends down and she picks him up off the surface of the moon, and it looks a little bit like the reverse scene of when Supergirl died in Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
She's picking him up and holding and cradling him instead of Superman cradling and holding her. So like I said, there were several nods and throwbacks in this issue visually. All right, so you get that, and you get Superman recovering at the Justice League Hospital. And Superman, I don't know, he's talking to the League about how we're going to stop this guy. And they're like, we don't know. He's not, Green Lantern's like, he doesn't show up on any of the alien databases. We don't know what he is. We've never seen anything like him. And suddenly Superman's like, oh, crap. And he raises up and he's gone. He flies out of there before they can say what's happened. Superman goes and he says, I promised the guys at Star Labs I wouldn't do this anymore. And he dives down into the planet. And the scene where he's burrowing through the earth looks to me like from Superman the movie, how he was burrowing under that trench. I mean, it's the visual callbacks is, I don't know if this is an Adam Hughes thing or if Bendis spelled this out that he wanted this to look like this. But whoever's doing this is genius. I mean, yeah. It really, really, really is well done.
Well, you probably have to get a director's cut or the trade. See if he puts.
But anyway, he gets to the center of the earth. I mean, the actual center of the earth, and he finds that guy there building some type of device. He's getting ready to destroy the earth the same way he claims to have destroyed Krypton. Because the Kryptonians that are there, him and Supergirl, is an infestation that must be cleansed from his point of view. So this was action-packed. Did not move slow. It was fun all the way through. The artwork from Adam Hughes was fantastic. This issue, now let's say a couple of them in the middle, 2 and 3, kind of moved kind of slow. This issue was great. And this brings us up to issue number 6 next week. And I'm really, really, really curious as to how this is going to finish. You know, Bendis, after 5 issues, have left us in a really interesting place. The question is will he be able to finish it in a satisfactory way, or will it fizzle and not be satisfactory? That's, I mean, how you know, at the end of the day, sometimes it's not how well you run the race, it's how well you cross the finish line. That's what I'm going to see. Is he's run the race really well. How's he going to cross that? Is he going to cross the line with power and authority, or is he going to drag himself across the finish line and be like, oh man, all that was sort of anticlimactic. I hope that's not the case. All right, Charlie, The Magic Order number 1.
This book is written by Mark Miller. You might find it surprising that I've actually bought a Mark Miller written book.
Yeah, didn't you just say the other day? No, it was Wade you were ripping on the other day. But anyway. No, you have previously aired your dissatisfaction with all things Mark Miller. Like, you know, the guy just is a hack and hasn't got it anymore. And it just, he retries the same stuff over and over and just, he don't understand why he's got a following and that kind of thing.
Well, I've said it before, though, like, anything that he's done before this,
mm-hmm.
I've been like, well, it's all been bad. It's been terrible. Like, his all of his Marvel stuff was always late. Like, anytime he did something for Marvel, it was late. Like, Fantastic Four.
Right.
That 1985 series.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Wolverine that he was also writing at
yeah,
the time?
Yeah, maybe. Seems like it.
Yeah.
And they were, because they all, like, connected, remember? And you never knew how they connected until, like, later on. To
right.
Where, like,
oh, yeah, I do remember that. They all were in his own little pocket yeah. world, right? Yeah, okay, I remember now. Well, I ain't thought about any of that in a long time.
yeah. And, what was that mini series that he did? When he wrote Civil War.
Yes.
And remember how late Civil War was?
Oh, well, horribly late, yes.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's funny now. It's like I see Mark Miller work now, and it's like every book is like monthly now, which is funny. I just find that a little
He finally strange. Got the lead out.
But this book is the first in a series of books, I guess, because of his deal with Netflix.
Uh-huh.
Where And this is a Netflix book.
Oh, okay. It's branded Netflix.
Yeah. But it's being published by Image, which I don't know how that works out, but okay. Mark Miller's writer, Olivier Coipel, is the artist. Dave Stewart's the colorist again, and Peter Doherty is the letterer. Well, I'll tell you something about this book. It's about... It kind of takes the premise where these ordinary magicians fight real-life magical horrors on Earth. But this is also Watchmen-esque to where, like, someone is systematically bumping these wizards off. I don't know if you used the term witch. They haven't really used that term either.
Sorceress.
So I'll just say female wizards.
Female wizards, okay.
But...
Enchantresses?
Whatever. But the thing is, this woman, her is the bad guy in this, and she's got a name. I'll find it in a minute. Because they're at the funeral for one of the wizards that was dead, and they all show up, right? All the wizards show up at the funeral, and her name is Madame Albany, which is weird. Like Albany, New York,
right, or
whatever. But like it
now you face the power of Madame Albany.
Well, the funny thing is, it's like when she shows up, like it's like a kind of an overcast day, but when she shows up, it completely turns night, and the son of one of the wizards is like, "Oh my god, did she just like take away the sun?" Like that. That's just showcasing how much power this woman has.
Right.
And they have this tete-a-tete where, like, they basically, she goes, "Well, I'm going to kill you all. You know that, right?" And they're having an argument over it. Well, the son of the wizard guy, he used to be a part of that. And someone asked him, was like, do you ever miss it? Because you were, like, really saving the universe here, right?
Right.
And, like, it shows this scene where, like all these wizards come along and they've killed this monster, which is, like, huge.
Ah, it's like a Cthulhu-level monster.
Yeah. It's a huge, freaky thing.
Complete with tentacles.
And, like, they flash back to him. He goes, "Never." Because, like, I guess he really didn't want to risk his life, or that was not fun for him.
Right. So never again, is that what he's getting at?
Well, yeah, I guess. Well, I'm supposing that he's going to end up joining back with them again.
Right.
If his father dies or whatever. But at the end of it, like, they go to this one scene, they're talking to this old woman, and apparently they get caught up in a magic trap. And the magic trap is that these cubes start appearing.
Right.
And it basically changes the whole, like, house or that they're in. And this guy is, like, it basically rewrites, like...
Reality.
And, like, replaces it. And this kind of creepy-looking dude is there. And he's one of the guys helping her. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about this book, it being first in a Netflix book.
Right.
A Netflix series or whatever, they have ads for Netflix in here, which I've never seen before in a comic book or anywhere, really. So, like, the first ad you come up to is for Castlevania.
That's cool.
And it looks like it's like an ad for, like, the Belmont Morning Star, and it's got the chain there. It's talking about, like...
Are these parody ads?
No, they're real ads.
I'm just saying, you can't actually get that chain whip.
No, it's an animated.
Oh,
it's clearly drawn, but the thing is funny because
that's what the ad's kind of supposed to look like, yeah. Right?
And it's funny because Dracula's under there going, vampires hate it. Like,
yeah, so it is kind of a parody ad. You know, making fun. It's advertising the show.
Yeah, the actual show.
But at the same time, the style of the ad is a parody of something in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And the funny thing is, the other one is for Luke Cage, and it's like a 2-page spread.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, man, if I get like Netflix ads like this every issue or whatever.
So I was like, I don't mind advertisement. Show me all the ads you want.
But I will say,
just of the cool shows, though.
This is probably the best written Miller thing I've ever read.
Really?
So,
better than Kick-Ass?
No. Yes.
Charlie didn't like Kick-Ass. If you, for those of you that were around back then,
the only thing I ever actually liked, well, kind of tolerated, was Nemesis.
What about Wanted?
Well, that what I'm saying is,
I'm talking about the comic, not the movie.
Yeah, I'm talking about like his proper comic stuff.
Right.
Not his independent stuff.
Oh, okay.
And I would consider Kick-Ass Marvel.
Even though it was an imprint. Marvel.
Which he has moved out. It's through Image.
Well, it's just like Bendis now is starting an imprint at DC to have all his stuff over there. And I guess he'll be allowed to do reprints from stuff that was published at Marvel through his imprint at DC. I'm not sure how that works.
Because he owns those characters.
Right, but if it was printed under a Marvel banner at one point, it looks like there would be a fight over their right to continue to reprint that. I don't know.
Well, here's the funny thing. I saw a...
I mean, it's part of the reason why it took forever to get 66 Batman out on DVD. Was because they were always fighting over those broadcast rights that they had from all the way back.
Yeah, but that's because Fox owned...
It was originally on CBS years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, but Fox owned, like, the trademark to the Batmobile, I think. They bought that.
Okay.
And that's what they... Because they still fight about that.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, which is funny because, like, I've heard recently that, like, Image is suing Robert Kirkman and AMC over Fear of the Walking Dead.
Right. I saw something about that because...
And I was like, how does that work? Because from what I understand, when you bring things to Image, you own them. Those are your characters. You do whatever you want to.
Right. But as I understand it, there is another book that Image published that was called something else that is almost an exact duplicate of the story idea of these people on a boat in the middle of the ocean to avoid a zombie apocalypse. It's the content, not the title, not the overall prim. It's the idea that it's like Robert Kirkman and the people at AMC took this concept from another Image book and adapted it to The Walking Dead without the permission.
Well, the thing was, though, too, I was like, wait a second, isn't Robert Kirkman the VP of Image, too? So
yeah, how does that work?
How is this company suing him? And
He's basically been made like an honorary co-founder or whatever. Like, of all the people who are the seven heads of... They brought him on board and made him a full partner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I said, I don't know how that works out. I guess I don't.
It'd be like if I owned Warner Brothers and Warner Brothers was suing me because I wore Batman t-shirts in public or something. It would be, yeah.
Well, weird. I don't know. I don't know how those work because I've seen Stan Lee sue his own company and his own company sue him too.
Yeah, that stuff's weird. I don't. At some point, there's a breakdown between whoever's making day-to-day decisions at the company and the owner of the content. And that I think that's how that happens. So even though Kirkman may be a partner at Image, he's probably not making day-to-day decisions at Image.
I thought he was a president, though. I thought then.
Yeah, but he's like, probably...
Doesn't it say, like, senior VP on these Image?
It may just be title. It may not hold any real power. That's a possibility. And
almost every third book is one written by him or co-written by him.
Right. But at the same time, the people at AMC...
Yeah, chief operating officer.
And keep in mind, at the same time, the people at AMC may not be checking everything with Kirkman either. So Kirkman may kind of be like a third-party sideline character, and the fight really may be between Image and AMC. And Kirkman's just like, hey, can't we all get along? That may be what's happening.
Or with was it, the guy who drew Adlard and him suing him?
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
Charlie Adlard was the original artist.
Oh, on Walking Dead originally? Yeah.
I think.
Sounds right.
And he sued him because they made that TV show. And he said he'd only sold it for like so many hundred thousands of dollars or whatever.
Well, if you sold it, you sold it. Was he co-creator on the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's when they had the big deal of like now artists are co-creators of books now.
Right. So he was co-creator, but then he sold his position. He sold out, right?
No, it wasn't Charlie Adlard. It was... I think his name is Moore.
Nah, that doesn't sound right. Who was the guy that was the original artist on Invincible? Before Ryan Ottley. He only
Kev
did...
Walker, I think.
Okay.
The guy who did... Oh, shoot. Not... thought you had it.
Which one?
Black's not Fear Agent, yeah.
Oh, I do. It's down here somewhere because it's a great big book. It's a library edition. This is great radio.
His name's Moore. Oh, Tony Moore.
Yeah. Tony Moore. Okay,
that's the original artist.
Oh, then the other guy was brought on after the fact. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's who he sold.
We'll get our details straight here in a minute.
It was Tony Moore or something.
Bear with us as we figure these things out, because we don't prepare for the show. We just go with it.
Well, I also think it's funny, like, the whole Ryan Ottley thing is now doing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that.
Why do you hate that? Because it seemed like he'd be good for that, because, you know, Invincible's got a body type similar to Spider-Man. He probably would...
Well, kind of similar, like, actions or whatever... But the whole thing is, like, he's bringing his art style to Spider-Man, right?
Right.
He's not becoming a Marvel house type person.
Oh, so he's not drawing the Marvel way.
So you know how, like...
There's a lot of variation on Spider-Man art. You got people like Humberto Ramos and Marcos Martin.
But what I'm saying is, you know how, like this is similar to Otley's work.
Right.
Though, like, right? He'll do some action scenes, but then others he'll leave, like, blank backgrounds, and I kind of don't like that at all.
Okay, so you're talking about not necessarily the way the character's drawn. You're talking about the way the panels are laid out and the fact that there are some talking head panels where there's nothing behind them, just a solid color.
That kind of bugs me.
Yeah.
Like, in Otley's work. Mm-hmm. Like I said, this Marcos Martin thing is great. I love it.
Right.
But when Otley does it, kind of bugs me. I'm like, dude, put some detail.
Yeah, draw a picture on a wall back there or something, you know. Make it look like he's standing in front of a doorway or something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like remember in, like, Invincible where they do the running joke of, like, he would reuse panels over and over again?
Right.
Like, every time they went to Washington to see the guy that made the costumes or whatever, he would just change, they just color the background differently.
Right.
It was the same panel, or when he met, Kirkman.
I think Ryan said famously that he did that to speed up the artwork so that he could reuse panels and
keep the book turning out. It's like, I hope he doesn't do that with... But I think he is. Doesn't matter. I'm not going to read the book because Nick Spencer's writing it, and I just...
Yeah, you've expressed your feelings
on
that.
Don't want to deal with that.
Okay, cool.
Papophobia is the fear of the Pope. Papophobia.
Maybe, do you think you have pentaphobia? What's pentaphobia? The fear of everything. That's it! All right, my last book of the night is Teen Titans Special number 1. All right, so to give you just a quick breakdown of this, the reason I thought this book was interesting is that we've got...
No Justice tie-in?
Well, no, that's not why I thought it was interesting. But...
And I was like, how does this tie into No Justice?
Well, it's because they just got back from that. Or Robin did. I don't know. That's why Robin's upset. It's because he just got back from that and saw a whole planet destroyed.
Well, they've done like three or four of these, right? This mm-hmm. is like the fourth No Justice tie-in.
Right.
Like one was Green Arrow. Like, and that took place like where Green Arrow was threatening Amanda Waller.
Right.
You push that button, I'll shoot you in the head.
Right.
And then the Titans one was like them like going to it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So it's what we refer to as Red Sky crossovers. In other words, there's nothing going on in the book that has anything to do with the crossover title that it's talking about, other than the fact that the sky is red.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of the point here. But the reason I thought this was interesting is that we've already got a couple Teen Titans books, right? We've already got regular Titans, which is the grown-up Titans that used to be the Teen Titans back in the day. You got Nightwing, Starfire, Cyborg, these guys. Then you've got the Teen Titans, which are a new crop of younger heroes. So you've got Damian, you've got the younger Black Wally Flash. You've got Red Arrow, which is a girl version of what used to be Speedy's character or Arsenal's character, and she's being trained by Green Arrow now. Yeah. And so you this
That's
new
Green Arrow's sister.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Just not, like on the TV show.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because she never had a sister before that I'm aware of. But anyway, all right. So I love it when, you know, these comic book companies put out content in movies and TV shows and then change the source material to match it. I love that. Anyway.
Well, it doesn't matter now because the Arrow TV show is losing his sister to bring back the original Speedy that they had before her.
Okay. Oh, the guy.
Yeah.
Oh, the original Red Arrow character, yeah. Roy.
Roy, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they're bringing Roy back because...
I've not watched that show in like three seasons, so I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, apparently, like, she's had enough with the show.
Oh, well,
which I think everyone has at this point.
Yeah, except maybe Stephen Amell, because he's getting money!
Well, so, apparently they said something like they're shooting it some way next year. Apparently, like, he's not going to be, like... Oh, yeah, they're moving time slots.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be earlier, so he can't do any, like, butt shots.
Yeah. Well, he never did butt shots, but he did some no-shirts-on stuff and things like that. All right, so back to this book, because we're not talking about the Arrow TV show. But so this book is our younger... So we've already got two Titans book. So we took...
Starfire.
The concept of this book is that this team within the team, there are three characters here, Kid Flash, Damian, who's Robin, and the new Red Arrow girl. These characters are all disgruntled for some reason. They're all aggravated with the things that's going on around them. And they can't stand it, and it's all because the man's trying to keep them down. And when I say the man, I'm not necessarily talking about the government. I'm talking about this code of honor and this rule system that the grown-up superheroes are forcing down their throats. You know, whether it's Batman telling Robin that he's not allowed to kill people, or whether it's, you know, red-headed Wally and Barry telling Kid Flash here that he has to do certain things a certain way, or it's, you know, people talking to the Red Arrow character about her mom and about the fact that she's her mom's a bad guy and you can't try to bring her in or whatever the case may be. They keep telling her, these kids, these are the way you've got to do things. And they don't see why they have to do it that way. So this issue is basically just three mini stories about these kids deciding they've had enough of the freaking rules and they're going to do things their way. So the book opens up with Damian, who in his off time goes to this restaurant because they make soup apparently the way Ra's al Ghul used to make soup or something. And he likes it and reminds him of the old home country that he used to come from. And while he's there trying to enjoy his soup, these mobsters come in who are running a protection racket. And they're trying to squeeze the owners. And so he decides he's not going to put up with that. He's going to go change into his Robin gear. And he does. And he comes in. And there's a big fight. And then in the course of that fight, the kitchen explodes. And the owner gets killed. Now, does Robin say, oh my God, this is my fault? Because if I hadn't changed into Robin and forced a confrontation right here in the kitchen, this wouldn't have happened. No. He immediately says, this is the rules' fault. Because if I was allowed to take these guys out the way I wanted to and wasn't trying to do things Batman's way, I could have got to this guy earlier, and this old dude would still be alive that runs this restaurant. And so he immediately blames everybody but himself. Okay, transition. All right, so he goes to figure out who's responsible for this, who sent out this crew. And it turns out that Black Mask has gotten out of jail. He's running protection rackets again. And so Damien finds him in a sauna. He's got the towel wrapped around him. He's sitting there in the sauna with a towel wrapped around him, not clothed in any other way, with the Black Mask thing on. I was like, really, dude? You can't take the mask thing off for a minute while you're in the sauna? Yeah, that thing's bound to sweat underneath there. But anyway, Damien comes in and he goes, your number's up. I got you dead to rights. He goes, what are you going to do? And he pulls out a gun. And he goes, oh, don't make me laugh. Everybody knows Batman don't use guns. He goes, I'm not Batman. And the scene shifts to outside the room and you hear bang. And the insinuation is that Robin crossed the line and actually killed Black Mask. Which wouldn't be the first bad guy I don't think that Damien's killed. I'm not sure about that, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, he killed the ghost. He decapitated the ghost right. guy. Because he's now, like, kind of friendly with her, his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Who has kind of taken up that whole...
So the scene shifts, and we got the Red Arrow character, and she's going through a similar thing where she's trying to rehabilitate her mother. That does, you know, long story short, that doesn't go well. Her mother actually tries to kill her. and so she's left at the end of that issue going, you know, never again. If I see her again, I have no choice but to kill her. So she is, even though she hasn't actually done it, she's also mentally crossed that line now where she's willing to do anything to get justice. And then the final story we get is the young African-American Kid Flash, Wally West character, who is trying to enjoy himself on the beaches of California, minding his own business, when the Suicide Squad shows up. And the Suicide Squad shows up, and they've got this woman that they've taken into custody, and he decides he's going to protect her because the Suicide Squad are bad guys. And so he's fighting the Suicide Squad, and he's holding his own pretty good, but it's a tough fight, when all of a sudden... Red-headed Wally West shows up, and he goes, wait, stop, kid. This lady that they're capturing is a wanted criminal, and the government has actually sent them out to serve the purpose of law enforcement here. They're bringing her in, so you need to step aside and let them apprehend her. And they go, and young Kid Flash goes, but these are super villains. You can't trust them with anybody. We should, as the heroes, should apprehend this criminal if that's who she is. And we should hand her in. And they go, I'm sorry, but this is the way it has to be. The government has vouched for the Task Force X or whatever they're called. And the League has been given an imperative not to stand in their way. You got to back off. And he's mad about it. So Wally tries to take him out to dinner that night to make him feel better. Trying to explain the rules and how things work. And he's just not having it. And by the end of that conversation, they get into a big fight. And basically, it's a, you don't understand anything, man. I'm tired of all the grown-ups trying to tell me what to do. And he flashes off. Okay? And so he goes out to where he last saw the Suicide Squad. And he goes into a room in some building that where that fight took place. And he finds that lady that they had apprehended, and she's dead. Now, they just basically took her around the corner and killed her. And now he's furious because the League's partly to blame for this. Because they trusted supervillains. Okay? And so the scene, last scene of the book shifts back to Damien going, you know, the old way of doing things is not working. We need a younger, hungrier version of the Teen Titans to step outside the lines and do what nobody else is willing to do. So the idea is that the new Teen Titans book going forward, I don't think we're getting the new number one. It's just number 20 next time, I think. But it's the new... new direction that this book is going in now is this renegade off the books hit team of Teen Titans that are going to be coloring outside the lines and taking bad guys down the hard way, blah blah blah.
Well, yeah, they've shown like previews or whatever in other books where like they've got a Lobo's daughter Crush.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Lobo's got a daughter. That kind of defeats the whole
Last Zarnian thing, yeah.
And so, like, there's a blue girl that's, like, real big.
So this seems really disingenuous to me. I just don't feel like these characters Well, with the exception of Damien, who I loathe as a character. With the exception of Damien, I don't get the idea that either any of these other characters would be that willing to cross the line. Damien, I think, would do anything if it suited him. I think if Damien grows up to be Batman, Batman will be the kind of person now that when he drops bad guys off roofs, he doesn't actually catch them with the rope. They just go splat.
Well, didn't you read the Batman 666 or whatever?
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was Damien.
Right. So that's exactly who he'll grow up to be if they allow it.
And or even in Kingdom Come,
mm-hmm.
where he grows up and is evil.
So,
Eva.
So I don't like the overall direction. I mean, I can if they want to write a story about these kids being disenfranchised and not feeling like what they do matters, and then they can tell that story without having them go off the rails and basically becoming, you know, Deadpool or whatever they want to be going forward. You know, killers, and which is what it looks like they're getting ready to turn them into. So I disapprove of that, DC Comics. Like I said, you can do what you want to with Damien. He's already damaged goods, but leave everybody else alone. All right, Charlie, that brings us to the last book of the evening, Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, number 801. Go for it.
This was Dan Slott's last issue.
Yeah, not 800.
And that's kind of funny in a story in itself because, like, at my shop, I guess people were like, yeah, at 800, I'm done. Dan Slott's last issue, I'm done.
Yeah, because it's 800. It's a big climax to the story, and that's it. It's over after that.
So he did this one-off story. And I say it's a one-off because it really is a one-off story.
Yeah, it has no bearing on anything. It
has nothing to do with anything. And it's him and Marcos Martín. And
which is, I love him on Spider-Man.
Yeah. Because I don't know. It's not painted. It's not, it's more old stylish.
Yeah, it reminds me of like the 60s style Batman art, if just with better coloring.
Yeah. Well, this issue like starts with like the kind of origin of Peter becoming Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
He gets bit by the radioactive spider. He doesn't stop the wrestler. He doesn't stop the robber stealing from the wrestling ring.
Right.
Shows him wrestling, and then, like, it shows Ben, like, getting killed and
him dealing with the consequences of that.
And, yeah, and then him realizing that the killer was the guy.
Same guy.
Stop.
Yeah.
So then it, like, goes to, like, this scene where, like, this guy walks into this, like, bodega in New York that's. That's a new word, a bodega.
Yeah,
a little store in New York, which I think is funny since Spider-Man Homecoming. It's like, oh, it's a bodega. It's a bodega cat or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a little store in New York. And he goes in, he's buying some groceries when all of a sudden some guy goes and robs the store. And the guy is in a hurry. You know, he doesn't say why. He just needs to get out of there. He's like, look, dude, I don't care what you did.
He's late for something.
Yeah.
He's trying to get to his kid's birthday party or something like that. I forget exactly.
But Spider-Man busts in at that point, like, starts and fights the robber, and, like, he's giving little quips and everything. And, like, he tells the cops come in afterwards, right? And they're still delaying this guy. And he's like, look, I got to go. Like, seriously, I can't be here. Mm-hmm. I came in for like a second. I stayed to give
my
story of what happened or whatever.
Right, my account of events.
But what's going on is he gets out of there and he drives to the hospital.
Right.
And he goes to his father, who's dying of cancer, I guess, in a hospital.
Right. And he could go anytime.
Yeah.
So the idea that every second he's not there is that much more good likely he's not going to get to see him.
Yeah. He could be spent with his father. Well, he finally makes it, and he talks to his dad, and he realizes he's had that time with him. And then it shows, like, him going through his life over the years. Which is kind of weird. Because this would make you think it's been decades that it goes through this guy's life.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter goes from like 16 to like 40. And we know he's not 40.
Right.
In the comic books.
Yeah, it was a little bit. Because the guy's hair gets noticeably grayer. Yeah.
Well, they, like I said, they go through all these, like his, the, like all these things he goes to. It just seems like it's way longer.
And it seems like from the way they're doing it that it could be 20, 30 years. Yeah. I guess in comic book time, the most it could possibly be is 10 years.
I don't... Well...
And I mean, Peter's what, 26 now?
Well, the thing is, like, he's... his niece, right, is there. And when... It's at least 10, 11 years.
Yeah, because I was going to say... That
because
right.
His nephew graduates, and that's who he's going to see, is the graduation of his nephew.
Right.
And his niece hadn't been born yet.
Right.
Well, it transitions to where, like, modern day Spider-Man's fighting, like, these crooks. And they're in these, like, Chinese dragon masks,
mm-hmm.
demon masks. And I was thinking, wow, that's kind of like a tie-in to the
Mr. Negative story.
Mr. Negative story.
Yeah.
And he meets the guy comes up to Spider-Man, the guy that's been... You've been going through his life, and the one who was with the guy from the beginning of the story, right?
Right.
And he goes up to Spider-Man. He's like, hey, thank you. You helped me a lot there. You saved my life back in the day. He goes, oh, man, I'm sorry. I don't really remember your name. He goes, yeah, that's okay. And he goes, well, how did I save your life? And he goes, well, I was going to buy a pack of cigarettes at the store or whatever, and that's how he stopped smoking or whatever.
Right.
Well, his niece starts talking to him. He goes to his niece, and he's like, man, that was Spider-Man. Did you see it? That's great. That's awesome. And she's like, so what? It wasn't even like he was an Iron Man or Thor or whatever.
Right. He's not an Avenger. Yeah.
And he goes, well, what you don't understand is, like, Spider-Man is here for the regular people. He helps, like, all of us people down on the street. He goes, he helps husbands, he helps girlfriends, he helps wives, he helps sons or whatever.
Right.
And he also helps uncles. And she goes, uncles? And he goes, yeah, every day Spider-Man saves somebody's uncles. And she's like, well, fine, I guess.
He seems pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you see Spider-Man leaving. I didn't really feel the emotional ties that everyone else did on this issue.
Yeah, a lot of people really said, oh my God, it's so poignant and so touching and really encapsulates all what Dan thought, Dan Slott, all his feelings about Spider-Man and stuff like that. And to some degree, it is a love letter to Spider-Man. Yeah. And I see what he's doing with it. It didn't move me to tears or anything like that. But it was
okay.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
Like I said, the Marcos Martino.
That was worth it alone.
This cover was really cool. That's really one of the reasons I bought it.
I really liked the fact that Marcos, on the first few parts where it was recapping the Amazing Fantasy 15, dialed that artwork into the Steve Ditko zone just a little bit.
Yeah.
He really was aping Ditko just and out. Because his artwork is not all that together different than Steve Ditko's. I mean, it's in that vein anyway. So it didn't take much to make it look like you were actually looking at pages from Amazing Fantasy 15.
It's kind of funny, too, because, like I said, they rebroadcast all that storyline and he does it in one page.
Right. So it was really, really well done. Like I said, as far as whether or not you thought it was a great story, that's up to individual, but it was well executed. I'll put it that way. So, all right, that brings us to all our books. That brings us to the end of that. So
brings us to all our
books. Yeah, I know. I misspoke. I apologize. we're amateur podcasters. We're doing our best. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a second to close the show out. You guys sit tight.
Wait a minute. We help you guys save the world and we don't even get any consideration?
You're right. 5-minute head start.
5 minutes? Are you kidding?
4 minutes, 50 seconds.
Hey, Charlie, you know what? Alternate Reality is a podcast about comic books, and the material in the podcast could be spoiler. And so people should not listen to this episode if we're talking about books that they haven't read but are interested in.
Shouldn't they know this by now?
We should have probably said this at the beginning of the show.
You say that every week.
I never remember until just now. Because it's on this paper that I look at for my notes at the end. And I was like, oh, frick, I forgot it again. Jeez. All right, so thank you guys for being with us tonight. We hope that we talked about something that you found interesting and that you enjoyed the show. And you'll come back next week and tell your friends about it. That means a lot to
there,
us.
There will be a, what is it, break things. So what? You can just, like, fast forward the pieces into the reviews.
No.
Oh, you don't do that anymore?
No. No, I don't do timestamps so that you can look on the notes and see when this part started and so you can go to the part you want. No, just listen to it.
Just fast forward.
Yeah, just you know, if we start, because we always announce what book we're talking about, right? So we're like, all right, so now this is Man of Steel number 5. And you go, oh, frick, I ain't seen that yet. Past it. You can always do that. And if we do spoil it, you knew what you were getting into when you put the show on. We've been doing this for years the same way.
That's what I'm saying. Most podcasts do.
Yeah.
Most comics podcasts are...
I have listened to a couple that went out of their way not to spoil, but for the most part, everybody spoils.
Yeah, so...
Yeah. You know what you're getting into. All right. Head over to the website, and you can check us out. Alternate Reality... No, excuse me. We've got too many web addresses. arnetcast.podomatic.com is our home on the internet for now. I'm currently working on changing some things. Hopefully we'll have a new site maybe soon. So that address may change. If it does change, I'll let you know. But for now, we're still over at Podomatic. arnetcast.podomatic.com. You can send us emails and tell us what you thought of the show. We would love that. We will read and respond to your message on the air, I promise. Our email address is alternatereality podcast@gmail.com. Go over to iTunes if you don't care and leave us an iTunes review. Tell us, you know, give us 5 stars and say, boy, this was the greatest podcast ever. The more people do that, the more visible we become and the more people will start listening to the show. When they search for comic book podcasts to listen to, they will find us more easily. So that would be helpful if you would do that. And again, whatever... you know, forum or discussion board or Facebook page you're on, if you're talking about comics with people, say, hey, man, have you guys listened to Alternate Reality? You should check these guys out. A little word of mouth goes a long way. So tell your friends and neighbors about us. We would appreciate that. We're on the social media. Twitter.com is kind of our real hangout. That's where we spend the majority of our time. Twitter.com/JohnLoveless/me/XOnslaught for Charlie. The show is at twitter.com/AR_podcast. We're also on the Facebook, but there's no real, there is an address for the Alternate Reality Facebook page, but it's like 10 miles long. So just search Alternate Reality Podcast. You should find it. Or conversely, you can search for me and Charlie individually. And again, we have very public profiles. You shouldn't have any trouble finding us. We're in Kentucky, if that helps you narrow down your search. So look for us there. Alternate Reality is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check out our show as well as a bunch of other really cool shows over at the Comics Podcast Network. The address for that is comicspodcasts.com. Anything to add to that, Mr. Charlie?
No.
All right. So Ant-Man and the Wasp is out this coming weekend. Also... so we'll be probably watching that at some point, maybe talking about it next week or so. We may have somebody on the show with us. Who knows what we'll do. But so keep your ear to the ground for that. Also, coming up in just a few days, by the time you hear this, it may have already come and passed, but 4th of July, Independence Day here in the United States is right here on us. So for all of us here in the United States, God bless the USA. We hope you have a good 4th, and be careful with the fireworks and don't blow your fingers off. Until next time, and in the meantime, my name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we're out. You guys have a good night. America. 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 Yeah.
past couple of weeks, I've watched two movies that I didn't really care for. The Last Jedi and Thor Ragnarok. Did you hear the theory now?
What theory?
That the Hulk that was in Infinity War was a Skrull.
No. Gross. I don't buy that.
Why?
Just don't.
You gotta admit, he didn't act like he...
Well, Banner acted the same.
Not really.
And besides, this is the same Hulk, unless the Skrulls intercepted him while he was being transported to Earth. This is the same Hulk that was on the ship that was at Thor Ragnarok. This is the same Hulk that crash-landed into Doctor Strange's house and couldn't turn into Hulk at that point either when they were still... So he had no time to be alone and get kidnapped.
Just theory.
Well, I just don't buy it. All right. In 3, 2, 1...